This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, just like Leicester City this season. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. And you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And now for something completely different.
Watch us on YouTube. Listen on your favourite podcast platform. Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow and join in now.
Strap yourself in.
Because we're set up, switched on and ready to go.
On Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.
Right, Chris.
All right, oi! There we go. That's a good start, isn't it? There you go. You can see me now. Yeah, you probably preferred it before. I know. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day, good night, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining in Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube and Twitch, or Leicester Till I Die if you are listening on your favourite podcast platform. We welcome you wherever you are watching or listening to us. It is another one in the series of The Conversation. I've got to say, I'm really thankful to this my guest for coming on today. It's a bit of role reversal. Not role play, but then again, we'll see how the show goes. And say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day to Paul. Oh, don't be giving me that. Don't be giving me that.
Come on, you Irons.
We'll see on the last day of the season. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And what a thing this is, for the pair of us. I mean, you've had some fantastic results in the past 5-6 years. Premier League, FA Cup, Europe. Mm. We've been on a less pleasant journey. The last time we won anything of note, I reckon, was 1980. We managed to win the FA Cup somehow, magically, from the second tier. But, you know, that's football. As Ferguson once said, football. Bloody hell, eh? That's it. That sums it up.
It is. It does. And, I mean, I've always said, well, everybody said, sort of following Leicester is a bit of a roller coaster ride because you have the ups and downs. I think, joint with Manchester City, we've been promoted out the second tier, we used to be able to call it the second division, didn't we? But it's a second tier now, more times than any other club. But of course, on the downside, it means we've been relegated.
Yeah.
Any other club. Exactly, you know. And this season, we sat there below a certain club from, or just up the M1 from us that play in red. I don't know. I can't bring myself to say the name. Close to Notts County, let's just put it that way. before we get on to the football, which we will
Hang on a second, though. But with that in mind, then you surely want to thank my side and Paul David Moyes for engineering that amazing, we needed it, 4-0 drubbing at the London Stadium. Come on, you Irons!
I was going to come on to that, but let's do that now. Yes, thank you very much. We needed that probably more than you did.
But hey, we really needed it. I mean, we were battling with, you know, Southampton and Bournemouth to be the, you know, the quickest exit out. I'm still really nervous, as all football fans are. A week and a half ago on TalkSport, because I do the overnight show, I would think we are going down, no two ways about it. I've still got that horrible feeling, and it's not magical thinking. I know sometimes football fans say the worst, hoping by saying it out loud it won't happen. I just think I really have. I'm struggling thinking of three sides that are worse than us. I think Southampton are going down, with all respect to the Saints.
Yes.
Maybe Bournemouth, but other than that, it's, I mean, you know, I think Leicester will be all right. I'm pretty sure Everton will be all right. They've got that kind of talismanic feel to them, Everton. I think, I mean, you know,
When I look at the table now, I'm not sure. I mean, the three I predicted to go down at the start of the season, I must admit, were Southampton, Bournemouth and Leeds. In any particular order. I think Leeds have been dragged down into it. I'm a bit sad about Bournemouth and Southampton because I live just outside Bournemouth, so they're two teams I can get to watch when we play them. But I mean, let's start with the football side first, and we'll come on to sort of your as Wikipedia say, your media personality side afterwards. Let's mix it up a little bit because you do the talk radio / talk sport overnight show.
That's what we're on from 1 till 5. It's the vampire shift, and I'm on from.
Yes.
I get in the night before. We do a couple of pre-records. We can't expect everybody to stay up till the wee small hours, but we do lots of, because we're all over the world on this thing called Sirius. We get lots of interviewees from the States, from Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and lots of Brits abroad. There's a guy who tweets us regularly called Berlin Badger. He's down under, and of course he's a West Ham fan, the old Berlin ground.
Yeah.
So I think we get it's an interesting audience. We're like kind of early afternoon telly in New Zealand, radio in New Zealand. It's that kind of setup. We're breakfast telly in Malaysia, or breakfast radio in Malaysia.
Yes. So
but, you know, what's great is, don't say this too loudly, we're on talk radio as well, so we talk about movies, we talk about books, we talk about, you know, weird and wonderful gadgets that are coming out, and not many of the bosses listen regularly. So we kind of get away with sort of murder.
Well, can I just say, you have some amazing guests on as well.
Yeah,
Chris,
we have some great guests, and you, Chris.
Oh, cheers, mate. Cheers. Thank you so much.
I mean, that's because we've got a bit of time. We're a 4-hour show, and we only have the news once an hour, the sport once, unless it's breaking news, of course, which means that we have time for more of a debate. And we do a weekly feature. We have a thing called Game Day Live on Chalk Sport. We get, you know, our first game of the day is always live. And the only question we've got on the radio is on Chalk Sports. And we try and get a proper representative, a fan, but also somebody who's like yourself in broadcasting on the mob, you know, the kind of, you can take a step back and be honest about the club. And we put the two teams up against each other, not for a really kind of raucous head to head, but just for an honest appraisal. Because nobody knows the team's weaknesses like somebody who supports that team. We're more aware of it and we can be more honest about it. So it's the kind of thing we can do slightly differently to the rest of TalkSport because we've just got that bit more time. So, you know, still nothing on the show. I mean, I've got the attention span of a magpie. Who are you again? No. And in fact, nothing on the show lasts more than 10, 12 minutes. But compared to what happens on a lot of talk sports, it's kind of hurry up and finish. You know, they're always saying just quick. Andy Goldstein's catchphrase on the drive show is just quickly, because they've got no time between all the ad breaks, between all the guests, because breaking news, whereas we can be a bit more leisurely. We're basically radio for the security guard, the lorry driver, and those maybe with a drinking problem.
Yeah.
Which one are you, Chris? Which one are you?
Well, I was waiting for you to say Insomniac, but I will take the drinking problem. I think that's the closest. I it's true what you say though about the attention span, because I'm absolutely addicted to YouTube, because I can watch something on there for 10 minutes and then that's it. I've had enough. And that's sort of the average length of a YouTube video, like potted history in 10 minutes of the Second World War. That'll do.
The thing is, though, with me, I love a long film. One of my favourite films of all time, Lawrence of Arabia. I like that film recently called Babylon about the early days of Hollywood. That was 3 hours long. And I like massive old door stories. I read a lot. I've got massive old door. I genuinely, when I get into something like War and Peace or Ulysses, I'm there. But when it's something like an interview and I'm talking to somebody, I kind of feel if they're not coming across quickly, I'm going to lose the audience. So in that way, it's going to be bam, bam, particularly on commercial radio. Bam, bam, bam.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. But you started on telly, though, didn't you, all those years ago?
After uni, I was the first in my family to go to uni because I was obviously a comprehensive boy. My dad was a lorry driver. Mum was kind of, what they call it as a homemaker, basically. She looked after. Yeah. I'm the eldest of six kids, basically. So she had a lot on her plate. And after uni, I went and trained on local papers down in the West Country. So I got a proper, everything was about getting qualifications. And I did 100 words a minute shorthand. I could touch type and all that stuff. But I never really wanted to get to Fleet Street because I didn't think I was kind of enough of a vulture. I mean, there's the thing, we all love reading those papers, but you've got to be fairly brutal to work on those. Because I was always fascinated by television and fascinated by the notion of making current affairs television. So I managed to get a job as a researcher at London Weekend Television, working for Greg Dyke, who went on to run the BBC for a while. Then he nearly bought Man United, he was on the board there, and kind of moved up through telly behind the cameras, though. So in that sense, because when I joined telly, here's one for the teenagers. When I got my first job in telly, 1982, right? There were only three TV channels, no Channel 4 then, got a job, and there was no overnight telly and no breakfast telly. All that happened in 82 when I arrived. So you think to get a job there was like basically discovering gold next to the body of the Kimmage the III in Leicester's car park. It's one of those, it was so rare. So it was, I realised, but then it was a very different TV industry. It's a union closed shop.
Yeah,
it was effective unless you did something stupid. It was a job for life or a job for you as long as you wanted it to be.
Yeah,
and it tended to promote people very quickly because the hours were ridiculous. So by joining at 25, by the time I was 27, I was a producer, and then I gradually kind of almost by the back door snuck into presenting. Partly because two things happened. One was there was a tele explosion. Channel 4 came along and they wanted different programs. They don't make their own shows, Channel 4. They buy it from people. So they're a publisher. They wanted programs made. And also, I can't knock it, my third brother down, Jonathan, became, he had a little job. I've got to help get him his first job in television as a researcher. He's a natural on the camera. He had this idea for a show with his mate called The Last Resort, a David Letterman show. They couldn't get people to present it. They went around all kinds of all shows of comedians who told to push off. Jonathan did the pilot. Channel 4 said, you're a bit of a beginner, but you got something. And when Jonathan became a star, I think they looked at me and thought, we've got our own Ross, who's older and shorter and uglier, but he's cheaper. So I began presenting.
But for those of us of a certain age remember this, I've got to ask you, because you were an editor for The Word.
Well, the thing was, I haven't produced anything. I worked with Anton Deck last as a producer. That was about, I did a Christmas special with him 10 years ago. Wow. That was great fun. But I always produced and presented and wrote for newspapers. I had like columns on a posh magazine, Tap, I did a column for years. Because I love, the thing about it is, producing is where you have the fun, right? If you're a producer, it's your show. But the presenter is the face on the magazine cover. If you're a presenter, people get you a cup of coffee. If you're a producer, you make your own coffee, but you're telling the presenter what to do. It's a negotiation. You're not a bully.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always loved it. So I produced the show called The 6 o'clock Show. I then worked on The Word for 2 years, which was amazing because it was like, amazing. We could be live from anywhere in the world. We had three bands playing live every week. Well, two playing absolutely live and one singing live to track that they recorded. Yeah. We had amazing, we did a thing called The Hopefuls. People kept writing to me and saying, I'd do anything to be on telly, get me on your show. So he said, right, would you let a live slug crawl across your tongue? And they did. Would you snog a granny? They did. I had this vision of somebody eating a bowl with milk and sugar on it of some of other people's toenails, right? So we found out, we found a cooperative. She said, I do the old people's homes in this part of London. My dog's coming, come here, dog, come here. We do the old people's homes. So we gather the toenails up. And we then found out to purify them, to make sure they weren't poisonous, you put them in that like nappy solution. Then you rinse them. We did that, and they were very soft, right? So I wanted the crunch. Dog's barking there. So then somebody said, why don't we microwave them? So we microwaved old age pensioners' toenails and fed them to somebody, put sugar and milk on them, and ate a bowl of them and said, I'd do anything to be on television. And he ate other people. So that was, oh, here he is. Come on, Donnie,
Oh, up, St. Bernard.
Come here, buddy. I used to have two of them. I lost one in the summer. He died, sadly.
Oh, sorry.
He's a rescue, but love, aren't you? Yeah. Lovely boy, dog. Boo, 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 boo.
But they say entertainment is dead, eh? I've got to ask you about one thing. You did. This sounds like probably the best show you could ever work on. The good Sex Guide Abroad.
Well, I was a reporter on that, and it was an ITV show. I remember that, and then a few of us. Be quiet, doggy. I think you might want to go out. I might have to let him out. But I went to South Africa and interviewed somebody who was working in a township. And would basically make potions for you if you either make somebody fall in love with you, get inside somebody's pants, or else to, if you were not able to, if like the Royal Mail when they're on strike, if you weren't able to deliver, they believe that it involved basically crushed bits of frog's anatomy. It's quite how that would get you hopping. Come on, boy. Come with me. Come on, doggy.
This was pre Viagra days, I take it.
There he
is. Here we go. Oh, lovely dog.
Yeah, he just wants a bit of attention. Come on in there, monkey dog. Come on. Look at people see you there.
Jealous. That's what it is.
Right.
Jealous.
Sorry about that. So you're here. No, jealous, you're getting the attention. He wants a bit of the weird thing there was, it was when South Africa was starting to be liberalised. And so they got rid of apartheid. And brothels had become legalised. And we went to one that was like... It was like being inside Peter Stringfellow's head, if that makes sense, because they had a number of things. It was a big motel, had themed rooms, so you could pick whoever you wanted to do the horizontal mambo with. And then, obviously, I was only there as a reporter. And the scenarios include you could be in the back of a 54 Cadillac at a driving movie. You could be in outer space, and the person that you were with was some kind of alien. I mean, there was a bouncy castle. There was a room where you could, if you wanted to, kind of gunge each other. And this was, but it was like, because they're a very frank nation. I mean, they're mainly Dutch, aren't they? The white people that came from Dutch heritage, the Boers. And so they're very frank. So I quite like it when she rubs jelly all over me. And then I pretend I'm on a dessert table and she's going to eat me up. It was all that kind of thing. So interesting. But interesting that you picked on that one, Chris. I was that was only one tiny bit of my career. That's the one that tickled your trout.
Of course. I couldn't resist asking that. Is it available on YouTube?
I think it's available on Red Hot and Dutch.
Oh, that's premium. We're going to pay for that.
There's one for the teenage babe station. Hey, is that still going?
But the other thing that we remember, well, I remember you for, the big breakfast on Channel 4. The best ever.
Like a lot of things in my life, that was pure luck. I mean, the company that made the big breakfast made the Word. I knew the boss of that company. I went and worked and did the Word. And Mark Lamar was presenting on The Word for me with Terry Christian, Katie Puttwick and Danny Bear. And Mark was doing also, he's working like a dog, Mark. I still see him occasionally. He's a lovely fellow, Mark, very bright man, great comedian. He's kind of retired from that. And he was doing the Word and the Big Breakfast, and he got sick. And it was a week before Christmas, and he was ill, genuinely. So and I'd already started presenting a very serious police appeal show, like Crime Watch in London, called Crime Monthly. And, you know, and I knew what to do with him. So Charlie Parsons, the boss, said, could you help us out? So I did a week of it, and Mark had already decided he wanted to leave. So literally, I went out and did 4 days, 5 days, Where Are You, Paul? And I was all over the country. And then I got the job for 6 months, and on the back of that, I then presented in the house for 6 months. So all in all, and reverse, all in all, I was there for about 18 months. But it was great because, I mean, you know, all my family are grafters. So I would do that in the morning. I would then go and do a radio show afterwards. And then quite often, I started presenting game shows for the BBC, and we'd knock those off in the evening. So, I mean, the tax man loved me for about 3 years. If only I'd put more money by for the tax man, I hadn't got my second divorce. I might be talking to you from a manor house there. But no, it's great fun. Also, the thing with the Big Breakfast was, it was, TV is very odd, right? It was groundbreaking. It was anarchic. It was like Tiz was every morning. But when it started to work, everybody else nicked bits from it. So within a year and a half, 2 years, it felt a little bit passé.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, that was a word. It was setting up with a word, right? We did an item on the Word about a man who needed an important part of his body lengthened. And we filmed the operation. And it caused a big furore at the time for all the national newspapers. Because part of my job on the Word was, Channel 4's slogan was TV to talk about. And I was my brief was, had to get one of our stories or something about the word in every Sunday paper. And we normally managed it. And that's, we didn't all only go for extreme stuff. We had controversial items as well. But so we had this, within 2 years, this morning did that, the daytime show. So the trouble when you're pushing the boundaries is everybody else follows in your wake. So after, I mean, the word ran for 5 years. I did two of them, or 4 years, I think. I had a fantastic time doing it. And the great thing was it was a huge train set to play with. But it kind of spoilt me for other shows because apart from the Anton Deck show I produced, the Christmas special with Robbie Williams, nothing else has had that much money to do what you wanted, if that makes sense.
No.
And I couldn't, and I thought, well, I don't really, producing is, you know, presenting show and go. You know, you turn up, you present to people, you do what you're told, you get your briefs read, you're meant to be across the subject, you talk to people on the phone. Producing, you're there 24 hours a day. And I thought, well, I don't, if I'm doing it and I've had the ability to be live from anywhere in the world, had the biggest Hollywood stars. I mean, I did it 91 to about 93, 94. We had Pamela Anderson on the show twice. I mean, she was like the biggest female star on planet Earth.
Oh, I remember Pamela Anderson.
So that kind of thing. And and after that, to think, well, if I'm going to go back to doing, I don't know, presenting, good though it is, Countdown or something, it's, you know, I thought that's too much hassle and not enough. Not, you know, the money would have been fine, but it's not enough juice. And I was offered more and more presenting, and I started to do more and more radio, which is great because A, people have always said I've got a great face for radio, but also it's always there, radio. TV, you can make a lot of money, can film a sum. I mean, I did 130 episodes of Jeopardy for Sky TV.
Yes.
So the whole summer, we did six a day, filmed it in Nottingham, in fact, the place you don't like to mention, and the old Central Studios. But then they showed those over 2 years. So I didn't do another game show for that time. So I couldn't live off that money. I've got five kids, two ex-wives, all that kind of stuff going on. But radio was always there. And I love radio because TV is always about tiny bits, isn't it? The word had three ad breaks and it was, you know, 20 minutes apart and all that kind of stuff. As I said in radio, it's a four-hour show. Now, we've got to hit the news at the top of the hour. We've got to have some ad breaks, but it's much more fluid. It's like you and me having this conversation. You know, it's like kind of, and that appealed to me because I love the sound of my own voice, but also I thought it's one of those, it's kind of insidious medium, isn't it? Radio. You can listen to it any part of the house. If you download our apps on TalkSport, which are free, or Virgin, or TalkTV, have it with you wherever you go. And I think we're able now, it's like you said about YouTube, we can filter stuff out. So I might be listening, you know, I'm not big on cricket. I've never played it at school. We did it, football schools, we ever played. And so if I'm listening to, say, Hawksby and Jacobs, the afternoon show on TalkSport, and they're doing cricket, I might filter that out. I'm half an ear across it. As soon as they mention something I'm interested in, boxing or football, bang, I'm back in there. So that's why radio is a fascinating medium. And that's why, I mean, I've worked in radio solidly, done telly, dipped in and out. I did This Morning for a long time as a showbiz reporter and fronted it a few times. But I must be doing radio now since probably, well, I mean, my God, it's got to be over, I mean, this is terrifying. It's got to be over 30 years now. It must have been the late 80s, I started doing it because I used to, a big mate of mine is Danny Baker, Millwall fan, great football broadcaster as well, great writer. And I went in with him, he presented on BBC London Radio, and I used to go in with him because I was his mate and hang around. And then he was off 1 week and he said to me, why don't you do it? So I had a word with the boss, and I lucked into that. I've been very lucky in that way. I kind of bumbled into it. And I could, you know, I was never going to be as good as Danny Baker, but I was better than some of the other people maybe that I'm considering, and probably cheaper because I had other jobs.
Well, that's the thing. I read somewhere you prefer the radio to television.
I do for that reason. I also think because if you're making television, the kind of TV I make, which is kind of sort of current affairs or popular culture, or like, you know, the closest I've got to entertainment shows is the Ant and Dec show. But even there, the producer has the fun. You slot the bits of the jigsaw together. Ant and Dec are great. They're more than just presenters, but they bring a lot to the party. They're fantastic. But you're moving chess pieces around them. Radio, you can do, you have a producer and you have people on the phone. Smaller team, you get to know each other and trust each other. And when the red light goes on, as you know, Chris, you're the king. They say that, don't they, in American radio. They say, when the red light's on, the host is king. Because short of them coming in and dragging you away from it, it's your, you know, anything on your mind, any phone calls you want to make. The oddest, you know, you must know, I mean, the oddest things, I'll say something, you know, really, you know, what was that talking about the other day? I pulled into the motorway service station and it was like 1 minute past 11 and all the food stuff was shut. They only had sandwiches. I'm thinking, these things used to be the places as a kid. My mate who had a car, Philip Green, we'd all go to his car and it would be exotic to go to the motorway service stations beyond Heathrow Airport out there on the M4, it would have been, because they, you know, could get something to eat or get a drink at midnight. Those days are gone and people started phoning in with their best and worst service stations. So that kind of thing is great because it's what's what's on people's mind, whatever it is. And that's what makes it great for a sports phoning show, because everyone's got opinions. I'm on air when, I mean, when people make the long trek back, when people went back, headed back from Fulham to Leeds. Yeah. I mean, and what are they going to do? They're in the car, there's three or four of them normally, they're spending the driving, and they're in the radio show. And you get an amazing, the audience figures we get, I mean, I never know exactly how many people are listening, but you make thousands of phone calls to find good people if you're doing it from your end. Those people phone us. It's always the bloke in the car who's the entertainer. It's always the bloke. You better phone in, Colin. You've got that story about X, Y, and Z happened. And that's where we get great stories throughout the day on TalkSport, because everybody's got a story. A lot of people don't want to tell their story, but those who do, tell them better than any professional, because it's all true. It's happened to them. They've told it loads of times, and it's funny. And also opinions, right? Because, you know, as we all know, everybody, if it's your team, you've got incredibly forthright opinions. We always feel that there's a certain side that are either our bitter enemy or that patronise us or do us down. And we're also all of it. I mean, you and I have the same vintage, aren't we? And, you know, men of fine distinct, like old cheeses, but old wine, basically.
Oh, I'm a bit of a Stilton, me, I tell you.
I can get a wash from here. But
thank you.
It's that thing where there's also things I know that I'm going to, if I chuck something out, you know, it might appeal to somebody 35, which is the age of my son. If I chuck other things out, I'm kind of across some of those things, because my youngest daughter's 21. I've got grandsons as well. And because of that, you kind of think, I'm sort of maybe, like a lot of us, if you've got children, you're more in touch with things outside your own age bracket, if that makes sense, which is important. Yeah. And football keeps, when I look at football, I'm thinking, Declan Rice, I'm looking at Declan, I'm thinking, I've got shoes older than you, mate. I've got underpants older than you. I'm probably wearing them. But that's what's great about it, because I'm watching somebody, my hopes and my dreams and my, you know, whether I'm going to have a good weekend or not, or a good week even, is based on a 19-year-old with all the temptations. And that adds to the drama of football. That makes football such a kind of, it's only live once, and it's unscripted drama, and it is magic.
I must admit, we got Luke Thomas, our left back, didn't have the best of games yesterday. Neither of us particularly like playing Blackburn Rovers, do we? Let's be honest.
No.
He's 19, and I actually did think that the other day. I was going through some cupboards and getting some old papers out, and I was looking and thinking, he wasn't born then. It's scary. But can I just say
he wasn't born when there was a Britpop row between Blue and Oasis. And that seems to me to be 4 or 5 years ago. That was getting on for 30 years ago now. That's what's scary.
Oh, it's when you've got to explain to your kids who put up certain pop stars are. Mind you, I grew up in the 70s, so half of them we can't talk about anyway.
I mean, the weird thing for me is, and you know, my kids are very switched on, but you know, I'll talk to them and their friends about the past. And my third eldest daughter, Violet, a couple of times when she was first at uni, she said, "Well, Dad, tell them about what it was like finding a pub in the 80s. And of course, when you say to kids these days, on a Sunday, you could only drink between 12 and 2 and 7 and 10. You couldn't buy beer anywhere outside those times. You could only buy beer and wine from an offie, an off-licence. Yes. Oh, and by the way, on a Saturday, they really spoilt us. You could drink from 11 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. Then the pub shut for 2 hours. Nobody knows why the flip they did that. And then they opened again from 5-ish until 10:30, 11. And you think, that 2.5 TV.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but when you can't play away, there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
D channels. Football, football never on the telly apart from FA Cup day, maybe the World Cup. What a grey world that was, you know. But these days, what that meant was things that happened that were remarkable were much more precious to us because they were so rare. And I think
definitely.
That's what you said about YouTube. There's so much access nowadays. They've got so much choice. Everything becomes almost like a level playing field.
Yeah. Well, welcome to all our yesterdays. Can I just say, I've got to say thank you for saying something that I never ever thought I would ever hear anybody say, whether it be TV, radio, YouTube, that a service station ever can be called exotic. I think you've probably got different memories to me of some service stations. But look, you're a happy hammer, but are you happy at the moment? I mean, I must say,
I think we were spoilt the last couple of seasons, and we earned that being spoilt. But we're traditionally a team that by Christmas we're normally worried about relegation. We're a team that have had some good cup runs. When we won in 75, the FA Cup, and won in 80, I think a lot of us could be forgiven for thinking every 5 or 6 years we win the FA Cup, we get the League Cup. Hasn't happened like that for all kinds of reasons. The world's changed, football's changed. I mean, I know it had to be changed, but I still bitterly miss Upton Park. I never called it the Berlin Ground. I don't know where that came in from, but, you know, I was there the final night. That was remarkable. Great show, but the London Stadium was fine and things have to move on. But it seems to me that we've had some amazing players down here. Paolo Di Canio is one of my favourites. I'm a child of the 70s like yourself. So, I grew up, it was a long walk. I could just about walk to Upton Park from where we lived in a place called Leytonstone. So it's very much my area. Yeah. And all the Essex corridor, the people there, they're all West Ham fans. But it's that thing where it hasn't, I think, in recent years, it's only to be Golden Sullivan, the late David Gold, God bless him.
I was going to say, actually, from all of us here, RIP for David Gold.
Yeah. I interviewed him a few times he was very, did a lot for charity, he used to open his garden, he lived Surrey Way, you know, back garden for charity twice, all that kind of stuff. But I don't think, and while Sullivan, I think he trialled for the club as a kid, and he's a fan, but actually it doesn't seem to me that anybody's quite got West Ham. I think there's, not that I'm begging for new ownership, although, you know, but I kind of think we are a bit like Leicester. There's a kind of, football's about finance, there's an economic benefit there to be exploited. But more importantly, there's something about our clubs. People talk about the academy, and I don't agree with that. I mean, Sam Allardyce, people said they didn't like, he kept us up, he did a great job. And, you know, he's a great manager in that way. But I think there is something about aggression and flair. I think we're like Julian Dix meets Rudolf Nureyev. You know, we've got a psychopathic streak to us, and we've got a fairly, it's a silly match, I think. We've got that whole kind of East End, you know, no one likes us, we don't care which Millwall. That's why us and Millwall was at Daggerstrom, who's got the hardest fans. Well, no, people don't fight anymore, thank God, at football. But in that sense, we've got an attitude that's not been tapped into. Maybe it's not fashionable. I think when we got fashionable, again, it was the 90s, when that whole loaded lads mag thing came back. People started saying, you know what, it's all right to like things that are kind of fundamentally passionate and working class and not sanitised, and at times make you feel uncomfortable because you're getting a thrill that, you know, your life sometimes, and for me, you know, my life's routine, humdrum job at times. I'm very lucky, I know, but, you know, driving in, driving out. What lifts you out of your current existence? Wonderful that is to the family, all that, is sometimes only that sort of joy, expectation, disappointment, heartbreak, and the jubilation of football. And that's why, and the lads may sum that up before they just became basically about showing the old waps for the lads. They were quite an interesting departure, and it gave football a kind of credibility and a new lease. It did it for boxing as well. I mean, boxing is my second favourite sport. And boxing has been, there are questions about boxing, I know. Boxing's always had that kind of, the dog going mad again, whiff of sulphur about it, and the kind of the match fixing stuff in the past. But actually, you know, it's the old cliche, isn't it? They said for working class people, certainly in the 50s and 60s in this country, three ways out of the East End. Right, one was showbiz, one was crime, the other one was sports, and the sport tended to be as an individual boxing. And it wasn't just the East End, it's, you know, working class all over the country. And it's no accident that there are very, very few working class polo players and very, very few aristocratic boxers. It doesn't work like that, life, does it? It's the hardest game. You get into that because that's your way out, but also it's a way of expressing yourself, of disciplining whatever aggression you've got. I mean, you know, the best boxers were people who you can imagine would have taken a different path. That's what's coming about the film Rocky. You know, Rocky, he's a boxer. He's also working as a loan shark, a leg breaker for the local mob boss, isn't he? And that was the thing, that they were big, but they could channel it into something much more positive. And there's also a creativity about sport, I think, about boxing as well, but football in particular. I mentioned Rudolf Nureyev, so we pretend you're a famous ballet dancer. But, I mean, you see, I mean, you know, I'm thinking of that, I mean, God bless, you know, the first Fulham goal against Leeds the other night, that guy, I always want to call him Panini. You know, the guy, but what a cool try that was. Yeah. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm, you know, I'm, I'm in my early 60s now, right? I'm looking, I'm thinking, I've not seen a guy like that for decades. You know, and it's not my team. I've only got a dog in the fight. Yeah. You know, Fulham, you know, I mean, okay, I like to think of them patronisingly as beneath West Ham and Leicester. They're not at the moment, are they? But you know what I mean? It's like they're a poor relation of London. They're like Palace and Charlton. But what a goal that was. And what they brought together, which is what I want for West Ham, and I'm sure what you want again for Leicester. You know, we want that team. And Brendan Rodgers, lovely fellow though he is. David Moyes, lovely fellow though I'm sure he is. I've never met either of them. I do wonder whether the teams have just stopped listening to an extent, even subconsciously, to both of them, and whether they've heard everything they can hear from them, and they've delivered what they can, and they need either a new injection of blood on the pitch or a new voice in their ear to take us back to where we should be and to avoid the dreaded relegation.
I mean, I've one of the fan channels that I chat with, West Ham Unofficial, it's run by Jake. He's 15, bless him. Lovely, lovely boy. But he hasn't really known, obviously, you know, since he started supporting West Ham, sort of the old days, if you like. And yeah, he did a show the other day, and he really does want David Moyes out. How are you an in-out? Because, I mean, he came...
I was very disappointed, to put it mildly. I was absolutely flipping furious when they brought in Pellegrini, who you knew was going to be, you know, a bust. You know, just because his name sounds like a variety of pasta doesn't mean he's going to be any good. He was chopping up his pension fund in China, and they got lured, Salvin and Gold and Brady by the... or whatever. We got to David Moyes, who's done a fantastic job for us. And when he came back, he was obviously a hero. I still think he's got plenty to give the club. I do wonder whether... I mean, you never know what goes on at board level. You never know whether there's money that he needs to get hold of. But I'm more... You know, I'd rather... There's a great... you probably know, there's a guy who wrote in these warning songs called Hilaire Belloc, a poem. And he wrote things like, you know, cautionary verse for kids, right? And one of them was about Oswald or somebody who got eaten by a lion because he let go of the nanny's hand. He wandered off in the Regent's Park, so eaten by a lion. And the end of that is, the moral of the story is, he says, always keep a hold of nurse for fear of finding something worse. Now, sometimes people, I think, God bless him, I think Graham Potter, maybe, you know, if I was a Chelsea fan, I'd have reservations there. I don't have the same reservation about David Moyes, because I also think, maybe you're in the same situation, who would replace him who'd be willing to do that job? He'd be any better. You know, and why would we divert money to pay off Moyes, to pay off Brendan Rodgers? You know, stick that money somewhere else for players or whatever. But I can't think of what you get. I mean, you know, be quiet, doggy. Come on. Come on.
I think
he doesn't like Leicester, he's saying to me.
Open the door, let him out.
There he is again. Look at him. What a beauty, eh? Look.
Oh, yeah, he's lovely. He's lovely.
Beethoven.
But, I mean... We know that Brendan, because I look at West Ham at the moment and think you are literally like a season behind Leicester.
Chris, say that again, he's barking away, yeah?
I look at West Ham and I sort of see a team that literally is almost mirroring us, but a season behind. You know, you had a couple of good seasons, you know, into Europe. Now you're struggling.
Oh, into Europe, you mean in the Europa Conference Matalan Help the Aged Charity Shop League?
That you'd have taken it if you'd won it.
It's like the Inter 2 Bob Cup. That's what, the Johnson's Paint Trophy, but with the Paint Trophy. I know we're there, but I think that's been a distraction. I think you look at it, Arsenal, okay, can only have benefited from their lack of commitment in Europe, I think, this season. Yes. And in that way, in that sense, for us, it's been another distraction. We've had injuries, we've had other problems as well. But you know, but you're right, you know, we've risen up, and then I think I think people thought that about Nottingham Forest, that maybe they're promoted too early. Now, Steve Cooper is a great manager. He's turned that around. But actually, there's a sense in which maybe what happened to West Ham was more than a mixed blessing. In the end, it was a negative, because who wants to beat Genk or places that sound like a Ferrero Rocher flavour when actually we're worried about relegation in the rest of the league? We're an English side. No, we're not a European side. I say that to my team at work, or my boss at work, the producer, Sam Stevens, who's a Man United fan. He comes from Wiltshire. Of course he's a Man United fan. But I say to him, you know, I'm interested in European football. I'm not passionate about it, because we never had European football as West Ham fans when I was growing up. It's almost an unknown. Why do I care about Real Madrid? Yeah, Real Madrid really good. So Man United. I don't support them. I support West Ham. I want every other team to fail in Europe, but mainly in this country. Including, I do apologise, Leicester.
No. We're all the same as fans. I've got to say,
and we've got to the last game of the season, isn't it? Could be the decider.
It is. That could get very interesting. It's getting closer and closer. I mean, when we won this thing behind me here, the Premier League trophy, we took advantage of the fact that we didn't have Europe.
Yeah.
You know, we and everybody else was, well, Tottenham imploded, Arsenal were being Arsenal, Liverpool had only just got Klopp in, Pellegrini was
being... Pearson was your... He was the architect of that FA Cup.
Oh, definitely. 100%.
Also, but yeah. you the season before the season of that, you were struggling against relegation, weren't you?
We were. We were bottom
that way,
you were an absolute,
You're the kid from nowhere who just won the Super Bowl. You're absolutely motivated. The proof, actually, not only does the Premier system work, but actually dreams can come true, even if it ended in a nightmare with Gary Lineker showing me his pants.
Well, let's not go there.
Hey, you can't take the boy out of Leicester. You can't take Leicester out of the boy, can you?
Exactly. He could have at least held a packet of crisps down there. But no, yeah. I mean, we did. But yeah, Nigel Pearson, it was the great escape. Yeah, we were bottom for so long, and then we had that fantastic run. That was the foundations on which Claudio Ranieri built. Whether that will ever happen again, I don't know, but I think it's given everybody...
But then you've got the FA Cup. I mean, Matt talks about, you may well know him, is Jeff Peters. Huge Leicester fan.
I know Jeff.
Well, lovely. Really lovely. One of the nicest blokes you'll meet. Leicester fan through and through. And he was saying to me the other day, he comes on the show once or twice a week, he talks about the Championship, the EFL games, and obviously his beloved Leicester. Mm. And he said he would never have dreamt, even in his most drunken or euphoric or optimistic moments, that in his lifetime, Leicester would win the Premier League and the FA Cup. And you think, you guys have had the gravy. You know, I'm hoping it will continue for you guys, because there are teams that none of us could ever say we like. I mean, you know, I wish nothing but ill to Liverpool and Arsenal, because that's my generation. Man United weren't as much of a pest then. It was more Man City, actually, when I was a kind of teenager. But, you know, Liverpool and Arsenal, they're almost swear words in my house. I've got plenty of friends who are fans of both sides.
Yeah,
but you know, we all did. I got behind the joy of Leicester making it, except those matches when you played West Ham twice that season. You know, so in that way, we wanted the mould to be broken. We wanted that kind of clique to be destroyed. And in a weird kind of way, now, don't tell anyone, I feel that a little bit about the returning resurgent Arsenal. I never thought I'd say it, but I'm kind of thinking, I hope Man City don't get it, because you know, 5-6 years ago, 10 years ago, I said I don't want Arsenal to win it at any cost.
Yeah, exactly. I'm now thinking,
you know what? Let's shake things up a bit. Let's keep Chelsea out of the top six, which would be lovely. Make Tottenham drop down, get beaten by... I'm hoping... I mean, by the time this is shown, it may have happened, but wouldn't it be lovely if Sheffield United knocked them out of the FA Cup?
Oh, it would.
I mean, you know, they're a long way north of you.
Do you think that could ever happen again? I mean, what happened with Leicester? It was remarkable. I wish I'd put a bet on, but I didn't. Mind if I'd put a bet on it, they wouldn't have done it on the kiss of death. But do you think that any club can do that? I mean, it's great. I love what Newcastle are doing at the moment, but like you say, I'll hate them in a couple of years because
I think the thing about it is where it was a perfect storm for Leicester, hindsight's always perfect vision, but you know, you succeeded brilliantly. Ranieri was great, Pearson laid the foundations, but other teams were going through troubled times around you. So it was like the playing field was more level. Now, that will happen again. There will be seasons when... I mean, who'd have predicted at the beginning of this season that the two teams that were going to be, you know, maybe favourites for the Premier League title and possibly having won the League Cup, the first domestic silver, will be Arsenal and Man United on their current form, recent form?
Mm.
No one predicted. Yeah. I know they're going to return eventually, but no one predicted Arsenal will be where they are. Nobody would really have said, well, League Cup and now probably more or less favourites possibly for the FA Cup, Man United. Which is like going back to Fergie versus Wenger, isn't it, when you think about it? Yeah.
Well, when you look, I mean, just looking at the table now, in the top 10, you've got Brentford, Brighton, Fulham, all in the top 10. It's great because I don't know whether you go along with this, whether you're allowed to say this, but obviously clubs like Leicester, we always think of the big six mentality of Sky Sports and what have you. And I understand why, because it's obviously the bigger audience and that's what pays their bills. But it's great to see these little clubs, well, I say little, no disrespect to them, smaller clubs, non-top six clubs coming through and breaking. You did. I mean, last season, we were never going to win anything last season. We were down at the bottom again. I was really willing you to get into that top four, because if it can't be Leicester, I want another club or outside that big six to do it.
Well, that's why you're right. I mean, Thomas Frank has worked miracles at Brentford. They're never going to be, I would imagine, Premier League title contenders in my lifetime. But, you know, a big cup win's not out of the question. And what they've done is they've shaken it in the way that Bournemouth did. I mean, what Eddie Howe has achieved at Newcastle is remarkable. Let's not forget, not only did he play for Bournemouth, he took them up through every level, didn't he?
There were 17 points out. I think there was minus 17 points. Because when I moved down to Bournemouth, he'd literally just taken over. Yeah. I can remember the Bournemouth players outside Bournemouth Pavilion with buckets collecting money. They were that hard up. What he did was unreal. He deserved as much credit for getting Bournemouth and keeping them up that season we won the Premier League as we did for winning it. But unfortunately, that story kind of cancelled that out.
But, I mean, I think there's an old saying, they say all political careers end in failure. By and large, all managerial careers end in failure. Yeah. Unless you are Fergie. And even Wenger was allowed to go up with a bit of grace, and he won an FA Cup. But by and large, that's what happens. And I think it's back to what thing I said ages ago now, which is sometimes teams just stop listening. They think, we know what you're going to say to us. Other people are changing. You're not changing your message. They don't even articulate it like that. And that's why things, it's inevitable. But what Newcastle should be thanking the lucky stars for is that when Eddie Howe went to Celtic, he turned around in that car park and came back down south. Yeah. He still would think he'd be achieving what he's achieved with Newcastle now. You know, I mean, people always mention Pochettino like he's the great, you know, saviour. Well, he was great with Spurs, in Spurs terms. Yes, he got to the Champions League final. He got to the final. They've been to other, you know, it's that thing where you think, you know, it's like Newcastle got to the final of the League Cup. It's when you win it, he gets to the, when you did it, when you made it, when you got Premier League title, when you got the FA Cup, that's there for all time, isn't it? I don't care that people say, you know, there are great players who've not won major, Harry Kane may never win a major trophy. Alan Shearer got the Premier League title, he would have achieved more at Man United, but he said he wouldn't have been the kind of Newcastle legend and the iconic figure he is. He'd have been, he'd almost to an extent, even though he should have disappeared slightly into Man United. That didn't happen at Newcastle.
I can't believe that with my son, like I say, who supports Leicester, because we grew up, we were in Burnley when the kids were born, and I said, look, you can support Burnley because it's your local team, I understand that. You can support Leicester because your dad does, but you're not supporting Man United, Chelsea or any of those, Liverpool, just because they're on telly. But I can't believe that I've shared moments with him of watching us lift the Premier League, the quarter-finals of the Champions League, the year that Wenger said we would be an embarrassment to English football, and they lost 10-2 on aggregate. Winning, I couldn't get a ticket to the FA Cup final. I'm watching it on telly. Final whistle goes, and thanks for VAR for that one, because I mean, I'm sure Chilwell wasn't that a toenail offside if he was. But we won it, and I had to turn away because I was crying. And my son started talking to me. He was stood next to me, and I turned around and he was crying, and we were just there.
I'll tell you what. I'm very sentimental. I was crying when Leicester won the FA Cup because it was an amazing, another paragraph in your amazing story. It's interesting you mentioned about, you know, Wembley. I had tickets to see us be beaten in the FA Cup this century by Liverpool. Right? I didn't know we were going to be beaten. What's really infuriating, in the end I couldn't go because it was in Cardiff. I gave the tickets to my dad and one of my brothers. But we were there at the very first Wembley Cup final, West Ham. We got beaten by Bolton. We won the right to be at the first final, FA Cup final, in the new Wembley Stadium, except the blimmin' builders, who I suspect were mainly from Leicester, didn't get their finger out.
So
wouldn't that have been a great bit of West Ham history? You're there for the very first FA Cup in Wembley, and you're there again. You won the right to lose again, admittedly, but at the opening of the new Wembley, didn't that? Went to Cardiff instead and ate leek soup or something.
Yeah. I mean, you got to blame Leicester. We get blamed for everything.
I'm joking.
I know. I mean, since you returned to the Premier League, though, I'm just looking. You've had some really, I mean, you know, you had a 10th, a couple of 13th, 12th, 7th, 11th. I think you've never finished, well, 16th you had one season down. But apart from that,
you're right, but I think for us it's always survival's enough. I take 15th. I bite your hand off of 15th. We're a cup side. And that's what we've disappointed. We've not been, for whatever reason, managers have to feel, you know, they got pressure from the owners to get to European football because of the money. Even Europa Conference, Matt Land helped the age of charity shop level we're at now. But in fact, you know, what the fans want is a victory. We want a trophy. You know, we want silverware. And that's why Ten Hag is going to be, you know, the king of the Reds half of Manchester for the foreseeable, because he got them that trophy. know, that's we won. Even Fergie's the least sentimental football manager I can think of, an amazing guy, but he was close to tears. He looked, if he wasn't in tears when they won the League Cup, understandably. Yeah. And I think that's what Leicester will always be now. You've got the Premier League title. You're the equal. In fact, Liverpool played catch up with you. Liverpool have only just equaled you and Blackburn, haven't they? Because they've won the Premier League once, which is great.
And it took ages to do it as well.
and moaned and groaned about it, and you know, but you know, I'm teasing about Liverpool, but you know, that's the thing, that you've always got that thing. You've done the FA Cup now. Now we did it, but we did it 43 years ago. We do another one, aren't we, Chris? Have a word. Come on.
Well, yeah, but this was our fifth attempt at winning it. You've got to remember, we lost four before. And I remember that West Ham Liverpool final. If two things was Alan Pardew dancing on the touchline.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody who saw it will ever forget. And of course,
it's similar to Ten Hag doing his cog dance.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Unfortunately, he did win it, though. He did win it. Alan Pardew didn't. And of course, he went on to be a Leicester great. Well, in my eyes, I've got a picture of him up here with the Championship trophy. Paul Konchesky's cross-come goal. Well, he still claims it was a shot on goal, but
I'm going back a long way now. My mum and dad used to, people say they took a paper, right? They're the Daily Express delivered, right? And on the morning of our cup final, when we beat the Arsenal, the headline was, it was Brian Clough being interviewed about West Ham, and he was being very rude about Trevor Brooking. He said, floats like a butterfly, and he stings like one too. And Trevor got a goal that day. And I've never forgotten that, because if even the great Cluffy can get it wrong, and people are drawn out to say things, but again, the fact that it stayed with me, is that really great quotes from Shakespeare and great lines from movies, again, shows you how important football is to all of us. You know, and I'm sure Cluffy, he probably only just said that, probably dictated that with half awake or half hungover down the phone to somebody. But of course, we like to think that gave Trevor the push. I think the ball bounced off his bum, actually. I think he scored off his backside, Trevor. I can't remember now.
You take it, though. You take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it Bill Shankly that said football's not a matter of life and death? It's much more important than that.
Far more important than that. He also said, didn't he, when he said, if God had wanted football to be played in the air, he wouldn't have invented grass. He didn't like it. He didn't like shooting the ball in.
I'm
going to have to go and feed this dog in a second. He's going to start to
be on his phone. Very last question. What are your hopes for West Ham this season?
Survival mainly. It's going to sound very negative, right? I would love us to finish anywhere above 14th, 15th. I think it's a respectable end for us. Because, you know, and I would love, if we're 15th, Chelsea and Spurs to be 14th and 13th. Spurs, but I would love. I mean, again, not because I'm particularly. My late uncle John used to see Chelsea in the late '60s with Dave Webb, Eddie McCready, Peter Osborne was playing for them, Peter Benetti in goal. But actually, because they've had it so good for so long, and because they've got another multi-billionaire owner, and because it ain't working for them, let them eat some crow for a while. You know, let them. And they'll bounce back. They're going to be winning again soon. And the last game of the season, you're my mate until then, and on the last day of the season. I wish, you know, you'd be going down. We wish you nothing but ill. Come on, you
are. Forget that. It's all that.
Chris, you're a top man, mate. You really appreciate your time. Lovely talking to you.
Go and sort your dog out. Lovely dog. Thank you so much.
Calm down, doggo. Come on, say. Come on, you irons.
I'm sure he's a Leicester fan. All the best. Thanks very much, Paul. All the best, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Oh, there we go. Sorry about that. Just pressing a few buttons to try and end the show. And thanks to Paul. Like you say, if you listen to Talk Sport or Talk Radio during the early hours, like you said, whether you're drunk, insomniac, like myself, that's my excuse. It's a great show. And it does go off football a little bit. But you know what? That adds to the fun of it as well. That adds to the fun of it. But no, thank you very much for taking up his time. He was a little bit late coming in because he overslept, but you've got to forgive him when he does the graveyard shift. What a lovely dog. I wonder if he had a thing of brandy underneath. You know, You were thinking that as well, weren't you? Thanks to everybody that's been watching. This has been a premiere. It hasn't been live. It has been pre-recorded. But thank you very much for tuning in and watching us live on Leicester Till I Die TV, on YouTube and Twitch. Or if you've been listening via your favourite podcast platform, Leicester Till I Die, thank you for lending me your ears. You can have them back now. I will see you very, very soon with another edition of The Conversation. Thanks once again to Paul Ross. Take care. See you later.
Thanks for watching. These videos are tremendous. You better like them too, or I'll be back.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
That's all, folks.
Thanks for watching Leicester Till I Die. This is Chris saying goodbye and see you next time.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.